Welcome to The Grow Show, powered by Steel. The Grow Show is brought to you by Marty Grinder's Grow Group, where we specialize in teaching landscaping companies how to clarify their platform, grow their people, build their processes, and realize profits. Everything we teach is grounded in real experience. Our team is actively involved in the day-to-day operations of Southwest Ohio's Grinder Landscaping Company. New episodes of The Grow Show are released weekly on Wednesdays. Remember to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Now, here's your host, Marty Grinder.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever the case may be. This is Marty Grinder from the Grow Group and Grinder Landscaping Company, bringing you another impactful episode of The Grow Show, powered by Steel. This week, we're going to talk to Taylor Milliken, the founder and CEO of Melosi. Taylor, give us a wave. But first, a reminder, folks, you can get the latest edition of The Grow Show delivered to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts, or you can watch us on YouTube for an enhanced learning experience. The Grow Show is the greatest thing since being told thank you. I got this wonderful thank you card in the mail last week, and I just want to read it to you. It's one of our clients in the Grow Group. I'm not going to tell you his full name, but it says, Marty, I wanted to say thank you for what you have done and continue to do as a servant leader for the people in the landscape industry, as well as myself. I appreciate what you've done with our peer groups, as well as the other ways you are able to reach out. I watch, listen to the podcast on YouTube each Wednesday morning on my way to our satellite location. It's my way of getting pumped up for the day. Thanks again, Drew. Drew, my friend, thank you. You have no idea what this means to me. And Taylor, it just makes me realize how impactful thank you notes are and what an impact they can make. And speaking of someone that makes an impact, we've got Taylor Milliken on the Grow Show today with us, the CEO of the Nashville-based Melosi. Taylor, welcome.
Thank you, Marty.
So good to have you here. Taylor is married to Samantha, father of three awesome kids, Gunner, Scout, and Remy. Great names, by the way. I'm jealous. I love all those. Those will be great names, you know, on a sports field is kind of how I'm thinking, you know. Gunner Milliken, that's a cool name. Scout Milliken, that's a cool name. Remy Milliken, you guys did good there. You were the host of Grow in 2022. That was a fabulous event, Taylor, and we wanted to check in with you and see how you're doing. Tell us a little bit more about yourself, because there's some folks on here may not know you, and tell us how you're doing. Let's have a great discussion today.
Yeah, thank you, Marty. I can't take any credit for the kids' names. That's my wife's department, and so she did a great job. I think I named Gunner's middle name, which is East.
Okay.
Gunner East. And other than that,
I
just was able to give a thumbs up and a confirmation that I liked the names.
Well, you did great.
But yeah, I'll tell everybody a little bit about myself. I'm born and raised here in Nashville, a Nashville native, as they call us, the unicorns here in Nashville. Definitely a growing city. Nashville used to be more of a small townish, you know, large town, but now it's definitely a bustling city now with lots going on. But started the company right out of high school, 2002, when I was 19 years old. And just like most of us, truck and trailer, and really didn't know what I wanted to do when I grew up. So I knew I loved being outside. I'd always been drawn to the smell of fresh cut grass, like most of us. I also love the smell of fresh mulch. I worked at the garden center in high school, and I was drawn to the striping of yards. So when we were 15, a buddy of mine, Chad Weiser, we had a lawn care service for one summer, and it was called CNT Lawn Care. And our tagline was, if it grows, we'll cut it. And my dad let us mow some of his rental properties and a few other things before I turned 16. But growing up in a small town of Gallatin, you know, my mom used to take chocolate cakes to the police department. That's how she got out of speeding tickets and and everything else. I think my dad probably figured if I got pulled over with a truck and trailer, then he'd probably be able to get me out of it. But we mowed for a couple of months without a driver's license, and we're mowing properties and having a good time. And in between cutting grass, we go to the pool. We just had the best summer. I mean, it's a bit of a kind of a sandlot type summer of mowing grass and just hanging out. And then fast forward into, I graduated high school, and in 2002, I graduated high school 2001, and then the spring of 2002, my mom walked me into a Tri-Green tractor and co-signed for me for a Bobcat mower and some Shindawa string trimmer and a steel backpack blower. And I was in business. And so started mowing grass, still not knowing what I wanted to do as a kind of a lost 19-year-old. And, you know, fast forward 23 and a half years later, we've got about 100 employees focused on design build. We're based in Hendersonville, which is about 25 to 30 minutes north of the heart of Nashville. And we've just launched a very small satellite location. And we're just simply running out of a storage unit right now in Triune, Tennessee, which is about 30 minutes south of Nashville, which is where there's a tremendous amount of growth in the South. And we're actively looking for a brick and mortar location. And we're somewhere between weeks and months away from going through about $1 million acquisition that will allow us to pull a few more of our crews out of our Hendersonville base location, combine them with the one satellite crew that we've got, mixed with $1 million, and then probably have that southern branch will be somewhere between $3 and $4 million next year.
That's fantastic. And overall, where are your sales going to be in 2025?
2025 revenue is going to be around $16 million. So we have had a bit of a kind of a reset, and we might get into this in kind of the details of what's transpired here for us over the last couple of years. But transparently, we went backwards. We went from about 14 million to 13 million between 23 and 24. And now we're back, you know, going from 13 to somewhere between 15.5 and 16 this year. And we're on track to sell about $20 million worth of work of sales, which should put us in a position to where we'll do, I think, somewhere around that 18 plus or minus dollars next year.
Yeah, it's a fantastic story. Let me ask you this. When you think back to those early days, you know, my vehicle was a tractor. We put a slow moving vehicle sign on. That was my car. You had a car. That was a lot quicker. I'm jealous. When you think back to those early days, what moments stand out as the biggest turning points that shaped you as a leader today?
I wish I had a picture of this. There's I think I do have some poor memories here. There's a picture of me on the front steps of a home, one of the first like really gorgeous landscapes that we did. And you remember when those days where you're going to the nursery and you're picking out every single plant and you're making sure that it's perfect and you're laying out every single plant and your hands are on everything. Right. So definitely early on, micromanager, making sure that everything was just absolutely perfect. And we were small enough that you had your hands around the entire company. And I remember the corner lot and had these gorgeous topiaries and these gorgeous boxwood hedges. And it was just stunning. And I remember it was a long day. I was sitting at the front steps. And I don't know who took the picture. I don't know if my sister, Tina, who's been with me since day one. She came out there and took the picture, but I'm filthy, my t-shirt and jeans and boots and just sitting on there. And I was, there was no exhaustion in my body. It was just all pride. It was the moment of, this is a really cool industry. And I was super proud. And then there was another one. It was actually in the same subdivision. It's called Somerset Downs, Hendersonville. It's a beautiful equestrian subdivision that we actually did a lot of work for the developer, and it's a little community that we picked up a lot of work in this subdivision. And we did a project in the back. Funny story, terrible story, but funny story is this was a pool project. We didn't do the pool. We did everything from coping out. And they did ask me to find them a pool contractor, which we did. And the lesson learned was to make sure that you get surveys on your projects, right? Who would have thought? Well, the stake in the back corner that was pointed out by Bill and Peg Connor, that was their property line, wasn't. So they literally installed the pool. Their property line intersected the middle of the pool. So not only were we out of the setback, we were literally off of their property.
So what did you do?
So after I thought my life was over, I picked myself back up and I called called Teddy, which was a developer at the time. Fortunately, it was my brother's father-in-law.
Okay.
And I said, Teddy, I'm in big trouble. And he said, boy, are you? And I said, what can we do? And he said, well, let me figure some things out. Long story short, they had enough green space in the community to where they were able to sell them a parcel, sell them a section.
Unbelievable.
So,
yeah,
you know, Peg and Bill Connor, they felt bad because they told me where the property line was. And of course I felt bad because I'm the professional, but at the time that was used loosely because, you know, I was still in my mid-20s at this time and was just a young scrappy guy trying to do good work for my clients. But the very first pool project I had ever been a part of, and honestly, you know, the pool contractor really should have been the one to do this because I was just pointing, you know, hey, you hire this pool contractor. And the only thing we were doing was the stone coping, patio and everything else. But nonetheless, that was a massive.
What did you learn from that? Because first of all, praise God, you got out of that one.
Yes.
Okay. That's a pretty significant lesson. Did that permanently impact you, or did the fact you got bailed out, did maybe the lesson not sit in as well as it should have?
I believe it sat in really well. I mean, we've never ever had in 23 years, that's the only issue we've ever had in terms of like legitimate big issue, whether it comes to property lines or easements.
Yep.
And so because of that, like we don't do projects now without surveys.
Right. Exactly. And what a great story to tell your team. What a great story for everybody to listen to right now.
And then that led me to, if you don't know, you've got to ask. And so like it's okay to do something for the first time. What's not okay is to do something for the first time and not be prepared, which led me into the checklist manifesto book, which led us into how we
great
processes process. Now. And professionalism is about being prepared for your client. And sometimes it is slowing down. I could have told Bill and Peg that, hey, well, I've never done this before, so this may take a little bit longer, but what my commitment to you is, I'm going to make sure that I put my best foot forward and that we are prepared and that I've asked all the right questions, et cetera. And sometimes it's just about humility, just telling somebody that you don't know.
I was just going to say that. That's what so much of that is. And, you know, Taylor, as you and I both know, that a know-it-all is not somebody that gets others to want to help them because they don't want to jump in there. You know everything. Why would I say anything? I'm just going to stay away from you. I think that's what happens. And the humility there that you're talking about, I know you're humble. That's a big part of being a good leader. You're right. So that was a wall. Was there another time when you thought you might not make it? I'm sure when you heard that was over there, you probably had a lump in your throat, hollowness in your stomach. You're like, what am I going to do? Your whole life probably flashed before you. Has there been other times like that in the business?
Maybe not that I wasn't going to make it, but there's times that I didn't know if I wanted to, you know, that there's like such stressful times. For us, one of our core values is create and innovate. And we've taken that at times to the nth degree where we just continue to level up in terms of our projects. So sometimes we go from, you know, the most simple project to the most complex in a very short amount of time. So the learning curve is so steep that we make mistakes, you know, whether it's, you know,
right,
a very financially costly mistake, or it's something that we might get in a little bit over our heads and we upset a customer. And that's something, even after 23 years, it's still very bothersome for me. If the customer's upset, I just take it so personal.
Yeah, I do too. I can relate.
And that can be tough on the family. It can be tough on the team. It's very difficult for me to shake that quickly. I've been able to like shorten the amount of time that it affects me, but it still affects me to the core. Even recently, in the last couple of years, Marty, you know, our core purpose is let's grow beautiful together. And
right.
Part of that is about continuing to grow the company's top line, bottom line, to provide opportunities for our employees. And going from a $14 million company to a $13 million company, not fun. It's not fun
you probably knew what you were doing there, but outwardly it may look like we're failing, when sometimes you have to do that to get things put back on track.
Yep. Yeah. And so we had conversations that there were, you know, back to the basics, backing up and punting, you know, some of those, you know, sayings were things that were being tossed around the office. But it's, you know, for me, we weren't rebuilding. We were always building. It's just a matter of where we're focused inside the company. But I know that this may sound a little silly, but I think that we got so focused on sales that we weren't focused on their customers. And so what we had to realign was that sales needs to be a product of customer service, as opposed to going.
Sales needs to be a product of customer service. So in other words, what you're saying is happy clients sell the next job.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. And yeah. I mean, who could argue with that?
And it can be so much that we're always so forward thinking about what the next project is that we forget about the project that we're on. So then that impacts the closeout of the project. That impacts the, what we call construction administrative work that the designers and sales team are a part of throughout the project. And so just getting refocused on that. And one of the acronyms that we had to really kind of bring back up, the CEO, and it's clients, then employees, then owners. And we have to make sure that clients are the focus. And I know some teams will say that employees have to be the number one focus, but at the end of the day, without customers, we don't have employees.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So we have to stay focused on our clients and making sure that they love us and that we're giving them something that they can't get from anybody else in Nashville.
So to our listeners on the Grow Show Powered by Steel and the viewers that are watching on YouTube, give us a little feel of the $16 million or so in your revenue. What percentage of that is design build? What percentage is maintenance? And what's the split residential versus commercial? Can you give us a little bit of feel for your business mix?
Yes, sir. So we're about 60% construction,
okay.
About 40% maintenance. And then of that construction, we're about 80% design build and about 20% bid build.
Okay.
And I'll go back to that here in a minute. And then on the maintenance side of that 40%, we are pretty split when you're considering the enhancement. So we're pretty close, 50-50 commercial, residential. We just have a much higher penetration rate on the enhancement side for residential. So base contracts, we're probably 40%, but we have a lot more enhancements on the maintenance side for residential.
And that adds up because as I know, Nashville is one of the fastest growing cities in the country. I think if it's not number one, it's number two, isn't it?
I know that we've been in the top three. Denver has been up there. A lot of times Denver's been number one, but Nashville has been top three for several years.
Right. Yeah. I forget. There's somebody counts it by the number of cranes, and there's more cranes, I guess, up in Nashville than any other city. There's one other city. I forget which one it is. Maybe it's Denver. I don't know. But so in terms of your ideas there, and you're talking about creativity and things, how do you balance the implementation of new ideas and not be a squirrel chaser? You've probably seen me talk, and Taylor, I've learned a lot from you. This isn't a one-sided relationship here. When we get a little bit further along here, I want to share with everyone what I've learned from you. But you and I are both idea guys. And when we say to someone, look, would you want someone to think you're a squirrel? Like the vision of this squirrel just running all over the place, crazy, can't remember where they buried any of their nuts, so on and so forth. We wouldn't want to be that. So how do you balance innovation with trying to keep your team focused? Like, where do your ideas come from and how do you keep it balanced?
Sure. Well, start with where ideas come from. And ideas come from people you meet and books you read. I'm always reading or listening to a book. And my goal is always to be around people that are smarter or more successful than I am. So
you have said that when I first met you, I remember you talking about that. And I think that I first meet you 15 years ago, maybe.
At least, yeah.
Yeah, maybe more.
Yeah, so.
It's okay, you can say I'm old.
No, I'm 43 now, so I feel like I'm getting up there. At least my kids say that I'm, Dad, you're getting old. I'm like, okay.
Well, you're not old and you're not gaining on me either, so.
But, and how that shows up, I mean, plug to the peer group. Peer group is absolutely a huge source of information and inspiration for me. actively involved in NALP, plug for NALP. I mean, absolutely. If you're not if you're not actively participating in NALP, you're absolutely.
Amen. And the advocacy alone that that organization does, and Andrew Bray, just even for that, to have a voice in DC, to have, you know, the Grow Group is never going to advocate on your legal affairs and other things like that. The EPA and everything else. NALP is a no-brainer. Everyone should be a member of that. I agree with you completely.
So it's that. And then even here in Nashville, I've got some friendly competitors. I went to lunch just 2 days ago with one of our friendly competitors, and we share ideas. We may compete with each other on projects, but we do have a gentleman's agreement that I've got about four or five companies here in Nashville that we absolutely will not hire each other's employees without talking to each other first.
Wow, that's awesome.
So I know that that's not holding us back from growing. It's just something that I can lay my head down at night knowing that I'm doing the right thing to do. We'll compete. Let the best man win when it comes to that, or let the best company win. But that's where I gather a lot of the ideas, and then how I balance them. I can say, and I think most people in our shoes can say that they are getting better at this. Hopefully everyone is getting better at this, because I used to be the guy that would come back from, you know, Grow conference or whatever with pages of notes, and we would try to implement 50 things in 30 days. And nothing would get
right. And you lose people when you do that.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard
they can't put that face. Right.
Yeah. I've heard you say the same thing about, like, oh gosh, Marty just came back from another conference.
Yeah. And I often joke, like, you know, the people that have been here a while, just like, just relax. He's going to another conference next week. We'll start this whole thing over again. Right. And, you know, that makes people laugh, but that's really how I used to be, Taylor. I just didn't understand. I was always chasing ideas and not half as good at implementing the ideas as I was at collecting them. Yeah.
So everything falls back on process for me. So we genuinely have a process for ideation, and it's, so we run on EOS. So our ideas get processed through our IDS section of our weekly meetings, identify, discuss, and solve. And there's some filters that we run these things through. And even when I hosted Grow, your team asked me to speak on change management, which, oh my goodness, that is not an easy thing for me and most companies, because I want things to change yesterday. Most of the time, I don't really want to go through the proper channels that it takes to get change implemented in the correct way.
Because you're impatient and you see where you want it to be and you want to fix it now. Is that right?
It is. And on my strength finders, empathy is number 34 out of 35. So like
mine's bad too. And I'm not proud to admit that, but it's bad.
So
that's who we are. There's nothing I can do about it.
Yep. So, which is important, because my team knows that I'm transparent with the team. So they help me, and my leadership team is a big filter for me.
And you probably have people on the leadership team that have empathy as a strength, I'm going to bet.
Absolutely.
Yeah. See, and that's where the balance is, folks. Yeah.
But it really is. It comes down to vision for us. A is asking the question of, does this complement or conflict with where we're going? And if it conflicts with where we're going, more than likely I'm not bringing it up. If it complements, then it's something that should kind of pass the first sniff test of, is this a good idea? And then with us, we're looking at our 10-year goals. We've got our 3-year goals. And so is this part of the roadmap? Is this going to help us get to where we're going? And then the other things, does it align with our core purpose? Does it align with our core values? And then is this going to be a plus, minus, or neutral impact on our clients and employees? And if it can pass each one of those questions, it's probably a really good idea. If it's not, if it doesn't, if there's a no, it's not going to help our employees, it's not going to help our customers, then all we're doing is trying to optimize something that shouldn't exist in our company.
I think everyone should pause right now, rewind about a minute and a half, listen to what Taylor said, and write it down, put it in a voice note. There's nothing wrong with ideas, and he's got a process for it. But if it's not consistent with the vision, they don't go that way. And that's the power of clarity of purpose and vision, Taylor. You're preaching it. This is leadership gold, because when you're so clear on your vision, you see it. Is this truly an opportunity that fits now? Or is this a distraction that would take us off our core purpose that we're working on? And I think so many entrepreneurs, and I don't know that it necessarily has to do with your age, it's experience, it's the number of years you've been in business, but you have learned, Taylor, that look, ideas are great, but we can only implement some, and they got to be consistent with the plans and the strategies that we put all this time into thinking about. At Grunder, we've defined our ideal client. We know what our unique value proposition, we know what we do better than all other options in the marketplace. We need to do that. You get an idea, you go and you spend time for that. And the unintended consequence of spending time on something that's not aligned with strategy is that that very thing you know you're really good at, you don't spend time on it. You're over here chasing this other thing because it's sexy. It gives you energy from the chase. And folks, this is the biggest thing that I see in working with entrepreneurs is they don't do what Taylor is doing. They don't put it through a filter. That's great stuff, Taylor.
Well, and I'll add something else that if you don't have a team around you that can tell you when you're off base, then you either have the wrong people in place or you need to at least add a person. And recently we had someone step off of our leadership team. We've added somebody to replace in that position. It's a new controller. Her name's Sherry. Sherry is doing a phenomenal job for us. She's high empathy. She leads in a different way than anybody else on her leadership team. It's unique. It's powerful. And she was only maybe 30 days on the team. And we had a one-on-one. Wow. And she sat down with me and she said, Taylor, can I be honest with you? And she's very soft-spoken, very smart, has got a lot of years in leadership. And I said, yes, ma'am, you can. And she said, I think you have a team focused on too many things. And I think we need to focus on just being great landscapers. So I would encourage you to sit down and really look at the priorities that your team has in place and see what can be deprioritized so that we can get a little bit more of a singular focus. So, which is interesting. I'm going to butcher the fact, but the book Essentialism, you know, priority used to only be a singular word. And then sometime in the 1900s or 1800s or something like that, it was pluralized. So it used to only be, there was no such thing as priorities.
Fascinating. And it makes sense.
And so that's what we did. Within 24 hours, one of our core values is we listen because we care. So even though I'm not naturally empathetic, I've been really focused on being a good listener. And so I listened to her and I trust her. I went back to the team and said, hey, this was brought to my attention. How do you feel? And they're like, geez, we feel the same way. And I was like, fantastic. Yeah. I said, well, spend some time looking at what you have in front of you and let's see what we can take off so that we can get focused. And the business is doing better because of the courage that Sherry had to come and talk to me. We have to be courageous as leaders, and we also have to make sure that we're giving our team space, a safe place to be able to tell us those things.
And I think, folks, you can see why Taylor is a very successful leader. I often say, Taylor, would you want to work for you? Taylor, I could work for you. I know I could. I like the way you do things. I like how pragmatic you are, the care. And you're right. Empathy isn't a strength, but you have a lot of emotional intelligence. You're very aware of how you come across to others. And you're smart enough to know that, you know, look, you're an owner one day out of the month in all reality, the day you look at your numbers, the other 29, 30, whatever days left in the month, you're a member of a team. Your office is set up that way. You're out in the bullpen. You must be someplace else. I don't think you're at the, I don't think you have a private office. Did you get a private office? You're still out in the bullpen, aren't you?
I'm still out in the bullpen. Your preparation notes said find a quiet place. And I can't say that the bullpen is a quiet place.
So that wouldn't have been good to do the podcast. So you're in probably your home office.
Yes, sir.
It's beautiful too.
Thank you.
Look, let's switch gears a little bit. You are as ahead on tech as anyone I know. Tell us some of the things that you're doing there in the area of technology and what that's doing for the business.
Well, in some ways, we've slowed down some of the tech in ways that made sense. So we had a handful of additional applications in the past that we found were somewhat redundant. And through our leadership team reading Essentialism, one of the things that we began focusing on is reducing any redundant tasks, anything that was double entry, just as a way to pull as much slack out of the company as we possibly could. But we are still very focused on our tech stack and ways that can make us more efficient, more effective. Right now we're focused on we're still testing the robotic, you know, mowers, the autonomous mowers, but we're still, I could not say that we've adopted the technology yet. And where we are is, and what we've found over time is no matter what it is, if somebody has to own it. And we just haven't been to, we haven't got to the place where we feel like that we have somebody that has the capacity to really own that. And so that's why that program hasn't been successful for us in the past. We've had a foot in the water with autonomous mowers for probably 6 years, but the reason why it hasn't taken off is because we just haven't had an owner. So just a few weeks ago, we were testing out the full-size autonomous mowers on some of our commercial properties. So we are looking at leasing some of the larger ones for commercial properties where it makes sense for us. I mean, we're using some AI stuff, Marty, but I wouldn't say that we're any further along than some of the other companies in writing processes and scripts and some of the marketing things that we're doing in property takeoffs.
That sounds good. And I know you're running Aspire and you're pleased with that. You're probably using property intel on there. I mean, and I think you're right. There's a tendency. What I found is companies like yours and mine, they are afraid to give up some legacy bolt-ons. And really, when you go to Aspire, you're going to find it's better off to just do it the way Aspire does, even if initially you don't feel that's the best way because of old habits or familiarity with the other things. I know we have one plugin, it's Trello, and then we use Inova and Azuga on the fleet management. But I think what you're doing there is really smart, and I love how you said it. I can't wait to watch this one. I'm going to have my team watch it. Makes sense on the technology. I want to share three things with you. When I was preparing for this, Taylor, and I think of the things that I have learned from being at your place, from being in our peer group with you, casual conversation, seeing you at an NALP thing, just all that. I see three things. I see you as humble and kind. I hope that people think of me what I think of you as a family man and how committed you are to your family and how kind you are. That showed when we did grow there, your humility, talking about your mistakes and your kindness. So that's number one. Number two, when I look at you, you've inspired me. Maybe you don't realize this, but you go for it. I mean, you have taken on some big things and you've been, in my opinion, a bit of a daredevil towards some stuff and you've gone for it. Now, you may not see it that way, but I do. And I admire that because I waited too long to grow my company. I sat at the $4.5-5 million level for 12 years. We're going to be over $18 million in revenue this year. And I look back and, you know, you're 15 years younger than me. You had a lot more guts than I did, truthfully, and you went for it. But then when I think of you, the thing that I learned the most from you was something you told me about 10 years ago. And you may find this trivial, but it has really helped me. And you told me that you read books that coincide with the timeline for when the skill may be needed the most. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, well, like in February, when I know I'm getting ready for sales, I'm going to read sales books. When I go in July and I know I got to be thinking about strategic planning, I'm going to be thinking about strategic planning. And that just makes so much sense because you tend to forget these things and trying to, you know, I see all those books behind you and I complimented you before we went live. I said, Taylor, that looks so cool. It looks fake. And you said that your designer, you had them organized in the order that you wanted to read them. But when she came in to redo everything, she put it into the colors and you thought it looked better. So you left it that way. Those are all books Taylor's either read or he's going to read. Like, this is a guy that is committed to learning. And I just think you've done a great job with that. And you've done a great job with pushing that through your organization, because I know that you ask them to be lifelong learners as well.
Yep, that's right. I mean, I'll speak a little bit about the book. One, I want to plug a book that we're going through right now. It's called The Science of Scaling. And so have you read that yet?
Vince told me, you said it's fantastic and we should give it a shout out.
It's just It has a lot to do with what we've talked about. And I pulled one of the statements out of that and dropped it in earlier. It's that too many businesses optimize things that we shouldn't even exist in our company. And I know that we've been so guilty of that. And, you know, we spend hours deliberating and debating over something that we shouldn't even be talking about. It has no value to the customer. And I think a lot of times we have a lot of sacred cows inside our business that should go away. And so really just focusing
on what we should be saying no to.
Absolutely. And which goes back to one of the, know your no's, you know, things that we focus on, especially in sales, and knowing your ideal client and what we're good at. And we have to know our no's. What are the things that we need to be saying no to that will help us be more, more effective and more efficient? So, but one of the things that we do, our entire leadership team, in middle management, everybody reads a minimum of 4 books. We do a quarterly book. Sometimes we do company wide. Right. And then oftentimes, usually at least 3 times a year, we just do a department book, and then we have a book club. And it's a very important part of our culture at Melosi. Yeah. So we do say that leaders are readers. And even in our interview process, one of our questions is, what book are you reading? And we'll still hire people if they're not reading books, but we do want to find out if you're asked to read a book, are you going to read a book? And of course, everybody's going to say yes. But when it comes down to it, you can tell who's read the book, who hasn't read the book. And we really hold our team accountable for making sure that we're learning.
We've got Taylor Milliken with us today on The Grow Show, powered by Steel, Nashville-based landscape extraordinaire, host of 2022 Grow. Taylor, as we wrap this up, what's your outlook for 2026? What do you think landscape professionals, owners and leaders of those types of endeavors, what should they be looking forward to? What do you see?
I think it's going to be a great year. We're setting a record for sales this year by the tune of 20-30%. Revenue-wise, we're just inching up, but we have one of the biggest backlogs we've ever had as a company.
For 2026. Love it.
For 2026. Part of that's the way that we've changed our sales process and also just being recentered and focused on our clients and making sure that that's the core of what we're doing every day, what we're focused on. But we think we're going to have several good years ahead of us of growth. I know economists say that somewhere in that 2030 to 2033, that things are going to get rocky again. So we're going to try to pick up as much market share as we can over the next 4 or 5 years.
Well, I'm rooting for you. I appreciate you. Thank you for coming on and sharing. Thank you for hosting Grow. I know we'll see you in Dallas at Grow 2026. Your big friend Gene and his sidekick Chris will be there to welcome you. Thank you, Taylor.
Thank you, Marty.
All right, folks, that's going to do it for this week's edition of The Grow Show, powered by Steel. If you haven't done so already, subscribe to The Grow Show, and if you can, give it a rating or share a comment. That helps more success-minded landscape professionals find us. And if you really want to help us, share this episode with your team or any landscape pro you know. Take out your phone right now and text it on to them. Thanks a lot for joining us on The Grow Show this week. We'll talk to you next week.
Join Marty Grunder and the Grow Group team for the annual event for landscape pros. Grow 2026 will be held on February 10th through 12th, 2026 in Dallas, Texas, and feature a behind-the-scenes tour of complete land sculpture alongside breakout sessions diving deeper into the topics we cover each week on The Grow Show. Early bird pricing ends on November 1. Register this month to lock in the best rate.